Are you seeking more creativity in your life? Join us, Nadia and me, Laura, the hosts of the Creative Rumble podcast.
Each week, we delve into the minds of inspirational creatives, share their wisdom and our own creative journeys. We explore how to align yourself, develop creative ideas, and find inspiration.
Join us as we explore what it takes to live a creative life so you too can feel the creative rumble.
Living a creative life is for everyone. Let's Creative Rumble.
The Creative Rumble podcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of this country and recognise Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' continuing connection to land, sea, waterways, sky and culture. We pay respects to elders, past, present and emerging. Peter Mellows has an everlasting curiosity. From a young age, family drives down little-used roads sparked his wanderlust, igniting a lifelong instinct to veer off course just to see what's there. Now in his 50s, Pete still takes the road less travelled, guided by a quiet attentiveness to the world around him and a desire to capture what quickens the pulse and stills the mind. Based in Nipaluna, Hobart, Pete is an emerging landscape photographer whose work reveals the wild, the weathered, and the quietly profound moments that shape Luchuwita Tasmania's natural character. His images often arise from long walks, early mornings, and the patience to wait for the perfect moment, reflecting his deep connection to the places he captures. As Andrew Harper writes in the Tasmanian Mercury, Peter Mellows comes to take photographs of Tasmania's wilderness as a person who moves through it a lot. His images have a notable immediate quality that comes from being immersed and being able to capture very fleeting moments. This immersion in nature, along with his intuitive eye for fleeting moments, defines the emotional resonance and immediacy of Pete's work. Pete's creative journey is as layered as the landscapes he photographs. He grew up in a mining and logging town, worked as a sound engineer and graphic designer, and managed a waterfront pub steeped in local history. His passion for sharing Tasmania's hidden beauty led him to create Wild Bike Tours, one of the state's first mountain bike tourism ventures. His ever-evolving creative practice has since embraced music, graphic design, and most recently photography and video, with his YouTube channel sharing stories and insights into the art of photography. Myself, Laura Purcell, and my bestie and colleague, Nadia Aliff Robinson, are curious about how Pete continues to keep creativity alive throughout his life. From developing new business ideas and creating startups to exploring the intersection of music, design, and visual storytelling. Pete's ability to weave these passions into his photography practice speaks to his enduring curiosity and inventive spirit. With multiple accolades, including commendations from the Australian Mono Awards, Australia's Top Emerging Photographers, and Wilderness Photographer of the Year, Pete's work continues to captivate collectors both local and global. Whether capturing the familiar or the far-flung, Pete's photographs invite us to see the world through his eyes. Ever curious, always searching for the next fleeting moment. Welcome to the Creative Rumble, Pete Mellows.
Thank you.
Welcome. Wow.
I've never heard my life summed up quite like that.
Oh, everyone says that.
Yes. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Just, yeah.
Well, you know, 50 years condensed into 2 minutes kind of makes you look back on where you've been in your life and what's brought you to this point.
And what has brought you to this point?
Everything. But yeah, it is. It's everything, because everything that I've done has added to the next phase of my life.
Absolutely. And there's so many different phases, and they're all very diverse, from touring to and running your own business to then running someone else's business, but then also being creative in sound and in as well, and in photography. So
yeah, my key component of my life is I get bored really easily. And so I move from one thing to the next, but it all accumulates into the next big thing. And so photography for me has really been the major part of my life for the last 5 years. It's always been a part of my life, but there's all these other aspects that have contributed towards where I am now. And my viewpoint on the world has changed a lot in that time. So growing up in that mining and logging town, I was very much about mining and logging. Like, my brain was really geared towards seeing the world through those eyes. And then as I've grown and explored further, I've kind of shifted away from that. I still respect those industries, but I don't think they have as big a place in the world as what I once did.
So how did you get into photography?
Yeah. Well, look, I was given a camera for Christmas 1979, and it was a little Instamatic thing, you know, that they had a little cartridge you put in the back. And I think it was that summer, I believe, we took a family trip down to Coles Bay, and we went up to the lookout on the Hazards that looks over One Glass Bay. And on the way up there, there was just this nice scene. But I took a photo, and the camera puts out these little square pictures. And so I took this one photo, and then as we were leaving, I thought, I need to finish this photo off because I only had half the scene. So I turned around and I took the next one, and then got it developed, took about 3 weeks, whatever. And when I got them back, those pictures lined up perfectly. They just butted up against each other and created this really nice scene.
You had a great eye for it.
Yeah, I think I must have. And that was when I realised that I could actually take pictures. Of course, most of my time with that camera was just family snaps and silly things like people playing games and whatever. But that picture has always stuck with me, and I've still got those two pictures stuck together. Yeah. But it wasn't until I did that I was in the design industry that I actually started to look more at photography. I was doing some work for Bride magazine, and it was just building some ads for them. And then I went to their office. I can't remember the name of the lady who was running it, but her partner was Steve Michalenko, and he gave me this book called The Joy of Photography. And I still remember it. It had all the basics of what you do in composition. All the rest of it I had no idea about, but it was the composition that stuck with me. And it was from that day that I really started to look harder at how photographs are created.
Like composed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, making sure for a start that there's no lines behind someone's head and that sort of thing, but also making sure you only show what it is that you're taking the photo of, or you show the surroundings only if they mean something to the subject.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's sort of quite an analytical way. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Balancing composition.
Yeah. They're really great top tips right now, because the amount of photos that can come out that have like lines or a pole sticking out of somebody's head and you haven't seen the backdrop while you're taking a picture of someone can sometimes wreck a picture. Now you can use Canva and get rid of all of that, but it would be nice to be able to take a picture that really just doesn't have that background that ruins the foreground.
It really hurts me when I see pictures like that, even if they're my own. They're gone. But if there's somebody else, if they make them into a publication and I can see they've made this basic error, it hurts.
Yeah.
So have you always taken photos of Tasmania's landscape, or have you travelled and done it as well?
Yeah, look, I got my first proper camera, my first SLR in the 90s. It was kind of about 97, 98, and that was when I was taking more considered photos, but it wasn't until I came back from the UK that I really started to look more at the landscape, because I gained a bigger appreciation for my home state.
Yeah.
And I like to take pictures of things that matter to me.
Yeah.
So before I went to the UK, the landscape didn't mean as much to me, and I was taking photos of like urban areas or, you know, travels and things.
Yeah.
And when I was in the UK, it was the areas that I used to visit. And so it was always just about what I saw that actually meant something. And now I go into the wilderness because I enjoy that, and that's what I take pictures of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, I don't seek out those places, I'm drawn to them.
Yeah.
Mm. So what is your most favourite place at the moment to go to?
Oh, I still really love Mount Anne. There's something about Mount Anne, and it's not the walk up there, it's the almost desolate landscape, and which is, it's like a plateau of a lot of stone and pockets of vegetation which are really beautiful in their scarcity. But to see this mountain just come out from nowhere, and then when you get closer to it, you can see it just drop so far down as well. So it's an incredible place. And that whole surrounding area.
Where is it?
So it's, I like to say it's near Lake Petta.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you take a road down towards the bottom end of Lake Petta, which is the start of the Port Davey track.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's about halfway.
And so for our national and global listeners or people who are not familiar with that whole area, mm-hmm. whereabouts would that be located in Tasmania?
Technically, it's the western side of Tasmania.
Mm. So sort of highlands?
Yeah, it is. It's a really difficult one to describe because it's southern Tasmania. It's only just sort of in the west. Mm. But I guess because the road doesn't go right through, I think that's what throws me, because you travel for probably 2.5 hours to get out there. And if you could see far enough, it's only maybe 150 k's to the coast, but you don't know that because the road only goes to the Gordon Dam.
And it's just so dense.
Yeah, it's so dense. And all you see are mountains upon mountains. Mm. But, yeah, technically southwest.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's wild.
It's really wild, yeah. Mm. It's some of the most incredible wilderness in the world. And, yeah, you could get lost easily.
So do you go with people when you go and take photos, or is it sort of quite a meditative pursuit?
Yeah, I like to go on my own because I can take my time, or I can just walk past something. And when I'm with somebody else, I feel like either I'm holding them up or I'm waiting for them.
Yeah.
And so I need to go at my own pace.
Yeah.
That's not to say I don't enjoy going with people, because I absolutely love going with people, and it's safer when you're going with people in those areas.
Yeah.
So when I do go alone, I make sure I go on a well-worn track, or I'm not very far from a track.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well done. Safety first.
Absolutely. And, you know, you take your PLB and...
Yeah, the weather changes quickly in Tasmania.
It really does. Yeah. I've been in a couple of situations where it got a bit hairy.
I just think one thing that really strikes me about landscape photography is that, one, you have this... The end result is a beautiful image, but to get that, there was a lot of reflection and quiet time and effort to be able to be in a location long enough for all the right variables to work to be able to take the thing that you're appreciating. So I think it's sort of like reflective in place and space and stuff. And I that's one thing that I really like about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of ways that people do landscape photography. And there's this amazing photographer, Joe Shemesh, and he will sit in a location for days on end until the conditions that he wants appear, and then he takes a photo. So he could spend days just waiting to take one or two photographs. I like to go to a location because I really want to get there.
Yeah.
And I might not spend as long as that.
Yeah.
In fact, I might tops spend half a day.
Yeah.
Because for me, there's so much out there, and I don't want to spend all of my time on one photograph. And that may happen down the track when I've seen it all and I want to go back and get that one picture. But for now, I want to see everything.
Yeah.
You know, but my core being is to go and see new things.
Yeah.
So I'll go see a new thing and I'll take a picture along the way, and it's whatever conditions are there, because that's what's there.
Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. But the way I take it is to try to show what I'm feeling at the time.
Yeah.
What I'm actually seeing in my mind is what I try to put in that photograph.
So do you mean if you're feeling a particular way based on how you're responding to the environment, that's the feeling that you want to put into the picture?
Yeah, yeah.
Not that, oh, I was just feeling this way today.
No, no.
And I'm going to put it into this using this environment. You're actually responding directly. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you have to consider to do that though? Like if you're using what, lens and light and, you know.
So my lens choice depends on what it is in that scene that I want to show. So if there's something far away, I need a telephoto lens so that I can fill the frame with that.
And that's a longer lens, like you can see further.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for people who don't do photography.
All those budding photographers out there.
Yeah, yeah. So the general school of thought is when you're a landscape photographer, you get a wide-angle lens, which shows you as much of the scene as possible. But I find that just shows a little sliver around the horizon that you're interested in, and you don't – when you get the picture back, you just – don't see enough of what you're trying to convey. And so I put on a telephoto where I can zoom right in and show that small scene that I see in the big expanse.
So you can still do that composition within the bigger scene.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, you might have to put an example of that sort of picture, and we can put that in the show notes.
Sure.
You got one in mind? Yeah.
Well, yeah, because there was one down at Lake Petta where the sun was filtering through the clouds and there was some rain and stuff in it. I focused more on where the old river used to go, the old Serpentine, before it was dammed, rather than show the big white scene, because that you lose the emotion of what's happening in front of your eyes when you go wide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless it's a big storm, then go wide, you know.
Yeah.
We've spoken about it before, but the light in Tasmania is different.
Oh, yes.
To other places.
Absolutely.
And so when, for our international and national audience, the light's obviously different everywhere, but in Australia, in Tasmania, it's quite profoundly different.
It's quite, it's got a bluer.
It's blue.
It's blue because of all the ocean and
I think it's just, it might be because, and I'm taking a guess, but it might be because the ozone layer's a bit thinner and the amount of blue light might be let through more, perhaps, because there's so much blue light. It can't be anything small that's doing that. You know, you could look at the angle of the sun compared to the earth and all of that, but I think there's something going on in the composition of the atmosphere that's letting more blue through.
Yeah.
Because you're going in and you're finding the moment, you're looking at the composition, you're responding with how you see, and how, and you've just spoken about Lake Petta and the filtered light. Talk to me about how you can create some emotion through a picture.
It's all to do with the light. So, I mean, a photograph is light, but let's say if you're feeling really happy and excited about a scene, you can boost the light. So you can let more light in. It's a brighter picture and it gives that sort of happy vibe, I guess.
Is it like maybe where the sunlight is positioned? Like sometimes you've got your backlight if you've got somebody in the picture, or from your side or from the front. And so on a landscape perspective, does that play a big part?
Well, yeah. So if a scene is backlit and I see that scene and it resonates with me, that is what I'm going to capture, and that feeling that I'm feeling should be conveyed to the person viewing the picture anyway, because they're seeing the same thing that I am.
Yeah.
But I guess the trick is to show the right amount of light to convey that emotion. If I want to convey a bit more somber feel, I'll pull everything right down to not black, but I'll let less light in. And if there's a highlight, I'll make sure that that's brighter, obviously, but it's still pulled back so that it's not glaring in your eyes.
It's fascinating, isn't it? It feels like, because we've just spoken to the wonderful Jane Longhurst in another interview session, and how she's crafted different sets with different shows in a theatre scene. So it almost feels like this scene that you're creating, the scenario, are you wanting the person to be viewing it or feel like they can be immersed in that space?
At the end of the day, I want people to see exactly what I'm seeing. And that means focusing in on what I'm focused on. So I get rid of all the distractions and just focus in on what it is that I'm seeing. And then if I'm seeing something that's making me feel like sort of warm inside, then I'll try to introduce a little bit of warmth in that photo. And if I'm feeling quite lighthearted about it, I'll let more light in and give people that feeling that there's this, you know, something to lift them up.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm, that's
I love
nice.
It. I've not thought about photography that way, but of course.
Yeah. It feels like it's the magician pointing the eye in a particular direction.
Mm.
Without being too trickery, but it's like it is a look over here, or I'm going to take the eye through a pathway if you look at this object and then in the back, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some techniques with landscape photography which, sure, everyone's heard of, like leading lines and and focus points and everything. And the true masters, I think, can give a wide scene and still draw your eye into the subject that you've found.
Like the immersiveness of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes, for example, if the subject is really interesting but you've got this big scene that it must be inside, like for context, then you need to draw your attention to that point, and you do that by putting in, you know, the lines in the rocks pointing towards and, you know, the
that just made me think of art history and how they're talking about like the lines of sight.
Yeah.
Making sure that your eye channel is moving along those angles.
That's right. But I can't draw those.
You
so
have
I
to,
have to move have around. To,
yeah, that's to so find interesting.
Them. So you're moving your body across a landscape to be able to find the right angle and the right lines. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. And, you know, if you've got something in the immediate foreground that you want to line up with something that's way behind, then moving a centimetre across can make all the difference in a picture, just to, like, draw your eye to the subject that you want people to see. I'll do that if I want to show that context, if I want to show the subject in a place, but quite often I'll just focus on the subject itself.
Yep.
And that's why I get out the longer lens so I can zoom right in and just show what it is I find fascinating about that scene.
Yep.
And it could just be the crossing of two hills, you know,
yep.
and a river or something. And
yeah.
And rather than have everything else and try to draw people's eye into it, I was just like, there it is.
Mm. Yeah.
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 What have been a couple of your most favourite outcomes lately? Some shots that you've taken and you've been really pleased with the results?
Look, my favourite still is probably the one that I have on my wall, which is the organ pipes on Kunanyi.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot it at night with the moon. So the full moon was behind me shining straight onto the cliffs, and up above was the Milky Way in parallel with the top of the cliff.
That, oh, I now want to see it.
That is probably my favourite one that I've taken. Yeah.
Mm. It is a beautiful shot.
So just photography in terms of mediums as well, have you been exploring other things?
Well, I'm exploring video a bit more.
Yeah.
I know that's still technically photography.
Yeah.
But still photography and moving photography are so different. The principles are the same, but you've got to think more about all the movement
yeah.
and where you're placing yourself. And sometimes that movement is you moving the camera because the scene is still, but then that generates more interest. Yeah, I'm exploring that more through my YouTube and trying to create better stories and more cinematic feel.
And so is your YouTube channel for budding photographers or for people to appreciate landscape photography in Tasmania?
A bit of both.
Yeah, cool.
So I'm going to digress a little. One of my favourite authors, he wrote in the notes of his book that you should never treat people like an idiot. And so his method was to not explain too much and to just tell the story. And to a large degree, that's what I like to do with YouTube, because I figure if you're watching a YouTube video on photography, you at least know something.
Yeah.
And I'll put in some basics every now and then, but it's really about this is what I'm doing, this is my story. And if you can't keep up, go find someone else to watch and then come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, detail, like, I'm using this kind of lens here, or this is what I was considering when I was setting up this scene, or sort of things like that that other emerging photographers would appreciate.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. You know, sort of like
I'll say
mentorship.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I'll say what my composition is and why.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I might mention my settings of the camera, which change in every single situation. But I might say why I'm using those settings. So, yeah. You know, if I'm using an f-stop of 5, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be it's up close and I want this depth of field to be a particular way, or if it's very far away, I'll say, look, your aperture doesn't actually matter, so just open it right up.
Yeah.
You know, those sort of things I find are very helpful to everybody.
Yeah.
Because even those who've been working for a long time don't always remember those points. Like I've watched beginner videos and got something out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I've watched.
So you're never too old to learn.
You're never too old to learn. And yeah. Quite often watching someone explain to a beginner how things work, you go, that's right, I forgot about that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I will mention the things that I'm thinking about at the time of doing my shot, and hopefully that is enough to give people some tips along the way.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating because you do combine the technical with the creative.
Yeah.
And that technicality really plays into the creativity. So you know what I mean? So yeah. It's not just seeing something and hoping for the best and taking a shot, but you're really understanding where your f-stop is at, what your shutter, like shutter speed.
Oh, you know, like I don't know what f-stop is.
Tell us.
You've obviously done photography, Laura. Okay. So please tell me what an f-stop is.
Okay. So an f-stop is a measurement of the amount of light that comes through your lens. And inside the lens there is an iris that, like with your eye, it opens and closes to let light in or shut down a lot of the light so that you can still see what's around you. Like okay. If your eyes are wide open in a dark room and you walk outside, you're going to be blinded. Yeah. It's the same thing with a camera.
Yeah.
So your f-stop is just a measurement of that. And the wider – and this gets confusing for newcomers, but – the wider the aperture, the more light that is let in, the smaller the number.
Okay.
Because it's basically a fraction.
Yeah.
So your f-stop would be 1/4 or 1/7.1, but we say it's f4, f7.1. So the smaller the number, the wider the aperture. But in actual fact, it is a bigger number because it's 1/1.
Yeah.
Yep.
So when you're in the field and shooting anything, mm-hmm. obviously with the camera, not just landscape, you're obviously considering where the light is.
Yeah.
Which is why Laura's forever saying to me, find your light when we're trying to take a picture.
Yeah, that's right.
Great.
Yeah. So you do. You find the best, you find the way the light falls the best.
Yeah.
And then you adjust your settings to manage that light. So you either increase the speed of your shutter to close the light down, or you close the aperture down, or you do a mix of both.
Okay.
Yeah. And depending on how you do that, can affect so much of your image.
And also that there's a real art to this, because when someone's picking up an iPhone, obviously there's a lot of that stuff that's already like it's trying to do it and do the like the generalized version.
Yeah. So your phone will just do whatever it can to present something that it thinks you might like. Yeah. Whereas with a camera, it's there are
You're curating the variables of
So there are automations, and you can put it into automatic mode and have it all think about it itself, or you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
And when you do it yourself, then you can think about, well, if I have a wide open aperture, one of the effects is that of that is that your range of focus is very shallow.
Yeah.
Just from the nature that light can refract.
Yeah.
But if you want to have a good amount of your photo in focus, but you still need to manage the light, then you have to slow down your shutter speed so that it allows more light in.
Yeah.
And so those two things can affect your photo in many different ways.
So that photo that you described that was your favourite, if you had the moon and the light and the Milky Way, how do you manage the moonlight hitting the surface, coming off, and then to get the... Because my brother-in-law takes photos of space, I know, and like my understanding is it takes a really long time.
It can. It depends.
Yeah.
So if you're taking photos of astrological bodies, then you can spend 5 minutes and your camera will move to like make sure that in the photographic terms that it's not moved at all, because space or the world's moving all the time.
Yeah.
So to us, space is moving.
Yeah.
When you're trying to photograph an object and space, you can't afford to wait that long.
Yeah. So they're, no, that's what I mean. Like there's so many things going on to be able to do that.
Yeah. So there's a formula, I think it's like 1/500th or something. I don't know.
It's washing over me.
Yeah. But basically, if you're looking at something through a 30mm lens, then you might have 20 seconds to be able to take a photograph of the sky without it moving or noticeably moving. And so that's what you've got to do when I
to not like get star drag.
That's right.
Yeah. Cool.
And star trails are amazing, and I did do one of that same scene with star trails, and it looks really great. But without the star trails, you need to kind of turn up the signal and let as much light in as you can. So you open the aperture up as much as you can. You have the shutter open as long as you can, and then you've just got to turn up the volume, basically.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that's why you do it, well, why I do it with the full moon, because even the full moon doesn't light things up enough until you actually take that photo for a set amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you were just doing a snap, it'd be black and you might get the sky if you're lucky.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because I know that for so long living here, and everyone was like, oh, there's going to be an aurora tonight. Mm. And you go out there and you're like, oh, like I might see like a tiny, like faint, like little bit of light. But then actually you need to play around with your camera. You need to have the right setting on your camera to be able to do that. And then you see all the amazing colours. And I think people don't actually realise that.
Yeah. And auroras are special in themselves as well, because they're constantly moving.
Yes.
And you don't really realise that, but you can't have the shutter open as long as what you might for the stars, because if you do, it's just a wash of colour, whereas if you do it as short as possible, that's when you get to see the beams and the the picket fences and all of those sort of things.
Amazing.
But then when you take that photo, all of the landscape is black. And so then you've got to take another photo for a much longer exposure to get that lit up and then put the two together.
Ah. Mm.
Yeah. Unless you've got a full moon, but then with a full moon, the aurora is diminished. So, yeah, you know, it's just that balancing act. It's crazy.
Mm. What about the macro? Like taking macro shots. And so is that a passion and interest of yours?
I do enjoy it. Again, it's more of a scene.
Yeah.
You can take a photo of something and it can look amazing, but in and of itself, it's still a bit boring as far as I'm concerned.
It's not as interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, for example, I went up to Mount Field just a few days ago, and because the Fagus is turning and it's all amazingly beautiful. But rather than take photos of just leaves on twigs and things like people do, and they're special and they're beautiful, and I take nothing away from that. But for me, it doesn't really say anything. It's just a branch with leaves on it. But so when I was up there recently, I found this little scene of lichen that was on top of a branch, and there were some fallen leaves in that lichen, and I really connected with that because that to me is a scene. It's not just an object.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's an object,
it told a story.
Yeah. 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 And if it's an object, it may as well be a product shot for all I care.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I love it.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? What's the difference between a beautiful landscape, a commercial landscape, and product shot?
And that's not to say I don't have my own product shots of Fagus, because I do, and I really like them.
Mm. Yeah.
But I prefer...
But for your creative outlet, that was what you got joy from.
Absolutely.
Taking a photo of a scene as opposed to something that was...
And that
generic
scene was like 5 centimetres long.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it's still a scene. And
Yeah. And having those scenes, but you're finding those compositions, and you were mentioning... Well, we've spoken about how have a design background.
Mm.
Does that influence how you see things as well?
I would say so. I would say that I think it was, how long was I in the industry? Probably 7 or 8 years. That is just ingrained in me, and I think however I was building documents and putting logos together and everything, I think all of that is just in me. And so when I see a scene, it's still that whole balance, and it's not calculated. It's just how I see it, and I move things around until it makes sense to me. I know what the rules are for composition, and I don't dismiss them, but I don't pay them too much note either.
Mm, that's interesting too.
A trained eye.
Yeah. But you also understand it, but you know when to break them.
Yeah.
Or just find what you feel.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And sometimes it's just leaving a big hole in the middle because it makes sense to my, you know, the way my brain is. I'd rather put the scene together exactly how it makes sense to me than just stick to a whole set of rules just so that it might be commercially acceptable, but it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, now we're talking commercially, or let's talk about business and creativity. So in the past you had your own touring business.
Mm-hmm. So the business was called Wild Bike Tours, and it wasn't the first mountain bike tour business, but it was the first one in the south of the state. And when I put it together, I didn't actually know about the one in the north of the state, which shows how much attention I pay to everybody else. But I had to create that from scratch. There were no guidelines. There were no templates that I could draw from. And I just looked at the places that I really enjoyed going to visit and built tours around those. And that required building documents and explaining to Parks and Wildlife where I wanted to go and why I wanted to go there. It was all about just finding things in those environments that I thought would be interesting to other people and then being able to present those.
Mm. Hmm. There's something interesting about you're going out into the landscape and you're taking photos and you're going a little bit off the beaten track a bit. Like, what's your duty of care in those spaces for a fragile environment in particular?
For sure. So certainly doing the wild bike tours, I was very aware of what I could and could not do. Parks were very specific about those sort of things. And, you know, I'd been in the bush a bit beforehand, but it was really just a matter of only step on the hard things. So if you're going off track, only step on the rocks, or if you can see the ground underneath the bushes, tread on the ground.
Mm.
You know, and if it's really soft, like if it's a boggy area, don't go walking there if you're not supposed to. So that's basically the duty of care.
Mm.
Now, I have been through an area that's quite soft and mushy, but I picked out where all the rocks were and I basically hopped from one to the next to the next so that I could get to a solid land mass so that I could get the shot that I wanted.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And being responsible.
Yeah, absolutely. And because I have a license with parks to shoot commercially, one of the rules that they have is stick to the form tracks unless you get permission from one of the local rangers. And so I make it my business to go and talk to the ranger before I go in and see where it is that I can and can't go. So if I'm going to a similar place I've been before, that's okay, I've already had the guidance. But if I'm going to somewhere new, then I'll go in and I'll talk to them and say, look, I'm visiting this area, let me know what I can and can't do. And they're really good.
Yeah.
I visited Mountfield East last year, I think, and they basically said, look, you can go anywhere there's rocks, and there's a lot of rocks. Stay away from the cushion plants, stay away from the soft mosses, everything else is okay, within reason. But that's the general gist of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And, you know, I don't like to hurt the environment, so it's easy for me. I don't have to think so much about the rules. I just know I don't want to damage those things.
Yeah. Is there anywhere in Tasmania that you would like to go that you haven't been yet? Like, do you have a wish list?
I've got a very long list of where I want to shoot videos.
Yeah, cool.
I couldn't tell you exactly where those things are, but I would very much like to do the South Coast track. It's crazy. There are so many places I haven't been and I've lived here all my life. The West Coast from Arthur River down to the Pyman River. I'd love to do that length of the shore. That is incredible coastline.
Yeah.
And there are some amazing places to photograph because I've seen photographs from down there.
Yeah.
And if you get there at the right time, it's spectacular.
Amazing.
Yeah. Mm. Mm.
But I do like to go where people haven't generally been.
Yeah.
So about a year ago, a friend and I went up to Square Tarn, which is at the bottom end of the Picton Range, and spent the night up there. It was really overgrown. There was a track, but you're pushing hard to get through with a big pack on your back, and that was just stunning. And a lot of people haven't even heard of the place, and that's the sort of thing I like.
Yeah.
I like to show
to be original.
I do, but I like to show people things that they've not seen before.
Yeah, does this landscape even exist here?
That's right.
Yeah.
And the landscape there I had not seen before. It was
it was like a different composition of vegetation and...
It was completely different.
Was so it like higher altitude or...?
Reasonably. It's about 1,000-ish metres. The Mount Picton is, I think, about 1,300 metres, 1,400 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the South Picton isn't as high, but it's still up there. But what I found was really interesting there, the east side of Tasmania is mostly sandstone and dolerite.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to get into geology now. Great. I love it.
Nadia's warming up. Here we go.
I was like, what kind of rock is it made out of? Just tell me, South Picton. Great.
Well, so this is the thing. So the east coast or the east side, dolerite and sandstone. The west side, quartzite. But here, it's like this molten lava conglomerate.
Wow.
It was totally different. It looked like something it just oozed over the landscape. And it's a really special part of the state. And I know I've talked to some geologists and they say that it's just so different there.
Mm.
And so
I'm going to go back and look at my map now, my geology map. And
got a geology map.
Yeah, Tasmanian geology is fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Amazing. Queensland geology is really interesting as well.
Yeah.
There's different spots inland from Townsville where basically a volcano came up on like the flat ground and then just like came up like this and went and just like like a huge like river just formed like this like 4 meter sort of column that just went for kilometers slowly moving on the top of the land. And when I see things like that, I think, you know, these stories of, you know, rainbow serpents slowly moving and just like all this kind of stuff and like just how old. So, amazing. I love it. Okay.
Tassie, Tassie was formed between Antarctica and North America, and it was the runoff from both of those continents that created Tasmania essentially. And then obviously the world all moved around and Tassie drifted off on its own little plate and then eventually came up and rammed up into Victoria.
Oh, wow.
I love and that's why Tasmania is so different to the rest of the country. I always thought it was just part of that great dividing range that went from Queensland all the way down, but it's not.
No, because there's vegetation here that's very similar to like Africa and other places.
Protea family.
And the Fagus as well. That's very similar to, I think, in around Patagonia.
Amazing. Isn't it amazing?
I love it.
And there are rocks found in Tasmania that are only found elsewhere in the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that something when you're going out into the landscape that obviously it's sort of embedded in you now that you've done all this research?
Look, I don't use it to find things. It just blows me away. But when I see different things that, you know, really surprise me, then I might go and find out why.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at that moment, if that's something that really surprises me, then I will take a picture and try to encapsulate what it was that made me feel.
So when you're putting together a composition and you're getting into video, so obviously there's are you using like music and graphics and sort of other things like this, or are you like experimenting with that kind of thing?
We're getting into storytelling now, aren't we? Yeah. How are you putting all those elements together?
Well, in the photography, the photography is what it is.
Yeah, picture says it.
I don't add anything to it. Although I'm starting to work with compositing, I don't like compositing photos generally.
Can you explain that, what that is?
Yeah, so it's basically getting two or more photos and putting them together and blending them so that they look like something new.
So what you might have to do if you were trying to make a composition of the aurora, like you were talking about before.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. So layers of pictures that you have taken though.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So a classic example is people focus stack so that they get a scene in focus from right in the front to all the way to the back. And certainly in macro photography, you need to focus stack if you want an object in focus because it's so close. But I'm really thinking more about using two different techniques of taking a photo and putting them together and creating something new. So it's still my photography, it's still a photograph, but it feels fundamentally different.
Are you using AI at all, or no. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't find that AI is very original, and I prefer to do my own work. I might use some machine learning to line the photos up, but even then you still need to make small adjustments by eye. But, far as creating something out of what you've got, no, that's my work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that especially like AI generated photographs, they're just a combination of other people's work. Yeah.
And there's also a misconception too that some of those images can be real, like if you're flicking through social media,
you
think that they're real.
Yeah.
Even there's videos of people scraping shells and barnacles off whales and it looks so real that, you know, suddenly we've got have you seen those?
No, but they're making me feel like I'm going to gag.
They're wild. You probably now that I've mentioned it, you'll probably start seeing them all over your feed. Sorry, everyone. But But there, yeah, it just, there's just some really interesting visuals that are coming up, which are like so fantastical and some are fun, but it's kind of concerning if it makes you think that that's what's really happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So in the video, I haven't progressed to that level yet where I can do all those fast cuts and text in places and graphics and stuff. And I guess really that's not me either.
Like, would that be for a YouTube channel of like hard and fast?
Yeah, so the
storytelling.
What I guess really you're talking more about the shorts and the TikToks and things where everything's got to be like so hard and fast to grab your attention and to keep your attention. Whereas I'm more about the long form storytelling.
But if you're creatively into this, I just don't see how you're going to be wanting to learn how to do it from the hard and fast anyway.
Yeah, because YouTube and the other platforms, yeah, you're really trying to pander to an audience.
Yeah.
And if you can grow your audience, then you can grow your audience further.
Yeah.
And if you grow your audience further, then you can start earning money.
Yeah.
And that's something that we all struggle with. Do we go down that line of following or chasing what people want and earn more money, or do we stay true to
our craft?
Our visions. And
do you want to expand on that? And
I
how
think
you
every
feel?
Creative person struggles with that.
Yeah. Well, so recently I took a brief hiatus from YouTube because I felt like I was trying to create videos for other people and for the people that I probably didn't want to create for anybody. And I was getting more views, but I just wasn't feeling it inside. I didn't get burned out, but I kind of got a bit jaded.
Yeah.
So I just had to take a break from it and think more about what do I want to do? What do I want to achieve?
Authentically.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Your creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's about telling the story of how I've come to take the photographs that I've taken.
Yeah.
So that I can then effectively sell those photographs.
Yeah.
Which actually means something to somebody as opposed to just putting up a photograph and having someone go, oh, that's pretty.
Oh, no, I like it because it's sort of, it's more balanced, isn't it? Because you're encouraging other people to appreciate the creative craft of doing landscape photography and learning the things that you're learning that you've learnt from being in the same thing, but also, you know, and you get to play with different mediums as well. Yeah.
That's right. And if you go into an exhibition, I'm not sure about any other art form, but certainly with photography, when you speak to the photographer and they tell you the story behind the photographs that you like, you're more likely to connect with that photo and you may even purchase that photo.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen, and it's happened to me as well, where you're literally just telling the story of how you took it, and they're like, oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
And and then that story stays with them. And then when other people go to visit them and the photographs on the wall, they tell that story and your story goes further and further.
About being in the moment.
Yeah.
So do you only work in landscape photography, or do you have like other styles, more commercial or?
So I do have a more corporate side. I've got my personal brand platform is Pete Mallows. Yep. And then I have a business called Photograph Tasmania where it's more corporate and commercial, and that really started through photographing kids' sports. So my daughter played football, and I don't like football.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody. I'm an Australian. I don't like AFL.
Oh my god!
But like a good father, I went to the games.
Yeah.
But to make it interesting for me, I just took photos of the kids.
Yeah.
And then I shared them with the Facebook group And then before I knew it, I was taking team photos and taking photos of all of the games and selling photos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, well, everyone wants a picture of their kid doing something. Yeah.
That's right. And my other daughter was a gymnast.
Yeah.
And so I asked the question if I could go down and take some photos during one of the competitions.
Yeah.
And so I did that and I sold pictures and it was really basic, like people actually had to contact me to buy the pictures.
Yeah.
The following year I was asked to do it again.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that for 5 years now. So that's the bulk of my commercial side. But, yeah. You know, I do other work. So this morning I was doing a job for somebody where they were installing a massive artwork printed and then mounted onto a curved wall. And it required documentation. And so I did that. And I've documented other works as well, which also led me into documenting some art, which I haven't put under my commercial side. It's more under my brand. But, for example, I did do some work for Laura. So Laura had her soft sculptures for an exhibition and she needed some photographs to put them into context of where she envisaged those works to be. And so I went to various locations with Laura and took some really lovely photos, if I don't say so myself.
Well, I've seen them. They're amazing.
They are amazing. Yeah. And for our regular listeners, they're familiar with me banging on about my exhibition. And the process behind that was really great because normally I would try and take my own, but this time, this round, I invited you to take the photos. So, but you were heavily involved in my process of problem solving what I wanted from a space of inquiry of creating a new thing. So, yeah, that was quite unique process for us both.
For sure. And that conversation had to happen so that we could actually portray what it was that we needed to portray.
Yeah, and we developed a new language as well. So to begin with, we were sort of like just taking a photo and I'm sitting in a space and with a sculpture going, thinking, oh, gosh, I don't even know what I should be doing here. Less is more, I guess. And so you would take and then as that session evolved, then the creative juices started to flow and you could see what was going on and you could see further than what I had to put trust in you to see further. And
for
that's
sure.
Why I obviously hired you. And then there was also being able to understand a language of like, well, if I'm over in the distance and I'm creating some movement, when do I know that you're taking a photo? And, you know, like there was one moment where I was like, oh, this is a great movement. I hope he's captured this. And then I look over and he's just looking at his camera and I'm like, oh, I thought, okay, we're going to need, I'm okay, going to need
to
work
to have some like smoke signals.
Yeah, it was literally like that. So we created a timing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then from there, that led into somebody else's work,
right.
Seth Binns, yeah. And he was working on a straitjacket that was very personal due to his past and he needed some photographs to really sort of portray how he was feeling.
So the artwork was, sorry to butt in, but the artwork was a straitjacket that was patchworked and very detailed but, looked. And then on the inside of the jacket it was white but with embroidered words of help me across the inside.
Oh, wow.
So it was in a very powerful piece.
Mm. Yeah.
And you photographed him in the space.
And we had a conversation about the sort of feelings and emotions that he has been through in the past and what he wanted to convey in these situations. And so we talked about different poses and everything. And when it came to the day, it was very, I hesitate to say easy because it wasn't easy emotionally at all. But the process was very simple because we'd already discussed exactly what we both wanted out of it.
Yeah.
And also the safety for everyone as well in the sense of the emotional safety.
That's right. And we had Emma on hand who had cared for Seth before and so she was on hand. There was no point where anybody felt unsafe.
Yeah.
Because Seth had to wear the straitjacket and perform in it, basically.
That's right. So, that was that was a really, really amazing period of time.
Mm.
And the photos came across really well.
Yeah. What did you do differently though?
Well, I actually did something that I don't normally do because the background wasn't actually very good. So we tried really hard to get this white background, but the space that we were in, neither of us were really familiar with, and it didn't really work that well. So I just cut it out. Just cut around Seth and put a black line all the way around him, and then put a flat colour that reflected the emotion that he was feeling. And it actually made it 10 times better.
There was like an illustration quality to that as well. Like it was almost like he became a superhero.
Like in a cartoon.
Comic. Yeah. But he wasn't the comic.
Yeah.
But there was this wonderful contrast.
The composition.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really strong.
Yeah.
And I think, again, that's the power of photography, being able to amplify an artwork or a landscape.
Yeah. And the biggest thing about our conversation was that it wasn't about him. It was about the work itself. But he was in the work, and the work made him feel particular ways, and you needed to see that.
How do you visually portray that?
Yeah. And so, like, one of the pictures, I've cut off most of his face. Like, you can still see the emotion that's going through him, but it's all about the jacket.
Yeah.
Mm.
Again, wow, pointing I see that them direction.
Yeah.
Oh, they're beautiful. You've probably got some on your phone.
Yes, I do, actually. Yeah.
But the thing about that, though, with photographing sculpture and sculpture with body is a whole, not an unknown territory.
But it's a new territory.
And it's interesting. And it's also about showing, I think there can be a risk that it's like between, you know, I'm wearing this outfit and I'm a fashion model, as opposed to I'm wearing this piece and I'm also a, like, I think dancers do it well. They really know how to embody costume really well, and so do actors. So it is, yeah. So there's just, it's how do you work with the costume as opposed to
That just made me think of like convict and incarceration. Mm. Like even
Yeah. We'll put those some links to the pictures.
Yeah. I've got some on my website. So I like to focus on emotion, and that is in everything, so not just in the landscape but in the pictures that I take of people. And that's why I think my sports photos work so well, because I don't want to just see some action. I want to see what people are thinking and feeling.
Mm.
And that's why the pictures with Seth I think work really well, because you can see it and you can feel it, even though it's not necessarily about him, but you know, they're the emotions that you need to feel to connect with the work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not my work, it's his work.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, I hope you have more creative collaborations like that though, because it sounds like it's an exciting territory.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed both of those collaborations in very different ways.
Yeah.
And I would love to do more, because it's fresh, you know, and it's exploring new avenues and exploring different sort of feelings and emotions. Like, I would never have thought to do something like someone in a straitjacket.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your future directions. What do you aspire to? What are you inspired by? Where would you really like to go?
I like exploring. And so, you know, like you said in your intro, I grew up with my dad just seeing a road and driving down it, and, you know, we're all going, oh, come on. But you know, that got ingrained in me into looking for new things. And you don't always find something interesting when you follow a path, but when you do, it's really amazing. And it you know, it's like anything. If you have that one exciting moment from doing the same laborious thing over time, you'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoy going down different paths to explore new things. And not just like a road or a track, but concepts So I enjoy just finding something new, just following a path and seeing if it brings me out to something exciting. So I don't necessarily have an end goal.
Yeah.
I just like to follow my nose.
That's really interesting because I'm sure our listeners, there are probably some listeners out there who already do that.
Yeah.
But how do you follow your nose?
I guess there's something that piques my interest.
So it's curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so even if it's a tiny little thing that just stands out from all the noise, I'll look at that and then see where that takes me. And if it leads nowhere, that's fine. But I've learned some things along the way.
Yep.
And then I'll find another path and I'll go down that road. And so sometimes I might not produce anything for a while, but it's not that I'm not actually doing anything. I'm just exploring to find the next path that leads somewhere. And so working with an artist to photograph their work, that's really interesting. And that's leading from one to another, to another, to another. And we'll see where it goes. In terms of landscape photography, it's much more literal.
Yeah.
I am actually looking for new places to go.
Yeah.
And so I often look at a map and I'll pick somewhere out, and then if I can find someone's photos, I'll see if there's something in there that might be interesting, and then I'll go and visit. And quite often you'll find something really interesting, because you don't just look at the big, you look at the small as well, and then you look at the infinitesimal, and whatever is there that can pique your interest, that's what I follow.
Your creative rumble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really is. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's worked through my entire working life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've built spreadsheets in the same way, where I've just gone, I need more out of this spreadsheet, so I'll just keep following this path and build, you know. Sounds really boring, but it's quite exciting to me.
I think you make a good point, though, because I hear a lot of people say that they're not creative and they're better off with a spreadsheet. And I go, but that's a creative space.
It really is. It's making maths work for you, really. And that's all it is, maths and logic.
You heard it here first, guys. Yeah. You are creative.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
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 Do you have a bucket list of places that you would like to
take
photos of?
Yes, Iceland and the Faroes, which, if you don't know where the Faroes are, it's between Iceland and Scandinavia. It's a tiny set of islands. Patagonia, you know, they're the big places, but I think Bavaria would be incredible. I mean, everywhere I haven't been.
Yeah.
Kind of.
That's a good attitude.
Yeah. I went to Nepal a few years ago and it was stunning, and I would love to go back with the eyes of experience. So rather than being shown around, I'd like to think more about where I'd like to go.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of going to a place more than once, because that first time you know nothing about it, even if you think you do.
Yeah.
And you see so much of all the stuff on the surface, but you need to take that step or two further.
Yeah.
And you need to do that the next time. We went to Japan last year and we saw so much, but I'd like to go back and...
Because now you know what you want to take photos of again or...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I know where I want to spend more time and where I can sort of skip.
Yeah.
Not that there's much to skip in Japan. But, you know, there's a lot of places that I'd love to see now that I know about them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
And again, that's following that path.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd love to go to South America, all of it, you know, and parts of Australia that I haven't been to. It's all exciting. It's all interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't think it matters where you go. You will find something interesting.
Yeah.
What about the places, like, if, you know, living in the same place, same town, you've seen the same thing so many times.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be as exciting as a street scene in New York perhaps, but you might be in a rural regional area. Like, what if you're just absolutely bored by the landscape, the scene around you? What's some advice?
Well, there's always something different. And if you're in a place that looks like it never changes, just take a closer look. There are smaller, like in terms of photography, there are smaller scenes that you could find. So you don't just look at the big picture. Look at the little things. Look at the rocks. Look at the way water flows. Or if you are looking at the big picture, look for changes in the weather.
Yeah.
Nothing is the same all the time.
Yeah, nothing's constant. Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly living in Hobart, you feel like you've seen it all, but I can go up to that mountain, Kunanyi, and see something different every time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is different every day.
Yeah. And you think that it never changes. And if you don't go up there, you kind of think, oh, you know, I've seen it all. But you go up there and it's like, oh, wow, there's something new every time.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So don't settle for boredom, basically.
Oh. Drop vote right there.
Yeah.
I'm interested in your future directions. I have an inkling, but I'm curious to hear how you want to play this out.
First of all, I still am very interested in shooting landscape. So that's never going to change, but I guess I can't concentrate on the one thing all the time, and I need time away from a particular task to refresh before I get back into it. And so part of what I do there is look at other things. One of the subjects photographically that I let slip for a very long time was live bands. So back in the mid-2000s, I did some work for Naked Dwarf, which is a website about local live music, and they hired me to take photographs of like touring bands. So I did Thirsty Merc, which was loads of fun. That was the first band I did for them, and culminated in Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh, wow.
So, which,
I know them.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of performance, they, like, great band and everything, but they didn't do a lot on stage. So I had to get really creative with my photography and did a lot of, like, long exposures.
Mm.
So I've got this one picture of the guitarist standing stock still, but his head's moved. So his head is a blur and everything else is still, which is really cool. And the drummer, you know, with...
So 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. And working with the lighting on stage means you really have to think about how a photograph is going to be taken.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the lighting's amazing, it's really exciting. So you could, like for example with Thirsty Merc, they had a strobe running every now and then. So I timed one of my shots for when the strobe went and I had a long exposure. So the strobe was like a series of flashes in a studio and the singer was moving sort of forward, so I got these snapshots.
Oh, like sort of staccato moving through the light.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So
five shots essentially in one photograph. And so, yeah, you just sort of work with whatever the stage lighting is doing as best you can.
Wow.
And so sometimes that works with the mood. So recently I had permission to shoot for Trent Moller, which is a Danish act, and he came over with his band. Absolutely amazing show. And it started off, I was only allowed to do three songs, which kind of hurt me a bit, but then I could actually enjoy the show.
Yeah, you got to experience it as well.
Absolutely.
And not be working. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. But those first three songs were really difficult because it started off sort of really low key.
Yeah, like people warm into it usually as part of their own set.
That's right. And the first song was really quite slow and I'm thinking, what am I going to do here? But
it's a shame you couldn't choose the three songs.
I know. but the lighting was really, really lovely. So it was this sort of a soft mauvey purple behind everybody. So I got a shot of one of the singers and I think the bass player, and it just gave this really lovely sort of soft glow around them. And so you work with what you've got.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get something that is amazing.
And I'm just thinking from everything you were describing before that you're taking those same photography skills and composition and what the light's doing and what you want to be in focus and what's interesting to you, and you're applying it to like a different genre.
That's right.
Yeah. Exciting. So you'd like to do more of that.
For sure. Yeah. Because it's exciting. It's like with sports.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you're just there to capture the moment and hopefully capture what it is that they're feeling.
Yeah.
You know, so landscape is about what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
But people is about what they're feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, how interesting.
It is.
So I did Trent Moller. That was, about 4 weeks ago. And then about a week later we went to see Tony Childs. And while I wasn't hired or anything as a photographer, we were like two rows back from her. So
oh, how fabulous.
I did take this little camera, which I hadn't used in ages, and it wasn't going to work. The flash popped up and I'm like, no, and just the put green, that away.
Because it was an older style camera, vintage. You wanted to pull out again. And then all of a sudden the green light.
It was like you're a 90s landed fan.
Landed on her face. Yeah. And I was like, put it down. Oh, we're amateurs here.
As soon as that flash popped up, I just put my hand over the whole thing and put it away. And then I got my phone out.
Yeah.
And, so I got some nice shots of her sitting on the edge of the stage right in front of us. And that was really nice.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah. And again, she was just there on her own, but the lighting really set the mood.
Mm.
And then last week, I was hired to take some photos of a local band for the first gig and did some video for them as well. And so that was really about.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah. And it was also capturing the excitement.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that would be really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were some good shots that came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course there were.
Yeah. No, but I mean, surprised. You know, like the energy of like a new band too. Like, yes.
That's right.
Wow.
And I'd love to do a lot more of that. And I know that with the younger bands, age is against me, but it's not too far against me, if that makes sense. So,
what do you mean?
Well, because young people, and I'm talking like early 20s, they like to get their friends or somebody who they think has the same kind of energy. And so they look at an older person and they don't believe they've got that same kind of energy because they look at you like you're a parent sort of figure.
Yeah.
And, you know, not like I'm acting like a parent, but they just see everybody that age as being the same.
Yeah.
But there are some of us out there that actually like to look at things in a fresh way.
We need to get you along to where we went recently to the Echo Festival to take photos of all of those different kind of artists because there was a real amazing mix of old and new.
And
that's
and
one
different lighting and things like that. Yeah. Like it'd be impossible to capture all the range of. Yeah.
That's right. And that's one thing I've been learning recently. Older people aren't always old. Like I know.
I'm eternally 21.
That's
I reckon
right.
everyone.
You sure are.
No, but like honestly, I think everyone has an internal age.
Yeah.
Where they were aging, and then they hit an age and then that's just their age.
Yeah.
So it's not like that they're not growing or
no.
It's just and maybe it was the age when the world opened up to you, or maybe it was when you what's the world word in psychology terms? Individuated or, you know, something. But I think
That's fascinating.
I'm
though.
Locked at 21.
I love it. But also, okay, so this is really interesting because we live in a very ageist society.
For sure.
And I think this is a challenge and can be a barrier to how you're being seen and how you know, get the work or like, and it doesn't matter how old you are, you can start at any time. To learn a skill. In fact, it's even more important as you age that you do
start to prevent dementia.
Exactly. No one wants to go there, honestly.
Right. But to get the work outside of YouTube where I'm front and centre, to get the work, my work speaks for me.
Yeah.
And I don't go in front of people and go, oh, look, you know, I'm a photographer. I mean, I do, but I don't try to get work by presenting myself. I present my work because the work, I think, is young enough.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I am, like,
Well, it's not even young enough. It's just that you have the eye that That's reflects right. the value that their musical
trying to bring
creativity
across.
Is yeah. trying to convey.
Yeah. So you're eternally 21. I feel like I'm about 35.
And well, you know, women do grow up earlier, but yeah.
But I Say still, no because in my 30s, I was running a pub.
Yeah.
And that was the defining moment for me. That was yeah. where I discovered that I was capable, that I was able to run a big business and be creative in all the different facets of that business from, you know, from drink selection through to the music that was put on stage to, you know, to menu selection, everything, and be confident in how I worked all of those things together. And then I actually sat back and went, you know what? I can bloody well do this.
Yeah.
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 And so that's why I am that age.
Cute.
That's
but
nice.
That's like creatively curating everything as well.
Yeah.
Maybe we just need to like run a pub. or a gig venue.
Well, actually, because Nadia and I speak about that a lot and you're also just naturally involved anyway. But basically we talk about what I think there was also a bookshop, a flower shop, you're like a big massive store, clothing yeah. range.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
A book, magazine, we're doing a magazine as well.
I mean, yeah, like, you know, we all have ideas and we all have, well, we don't all have, but a lot of us have so many ideas that you can't contain them all. But out of all those ideas, there's going to be one or two that are just going to stick.
Mm.
And so for me, that's photography. It's been other things in the past. It's been a tourism venture and it's been running a hospitality venue. But for me, it's photography, but it's also thinking about how I can make the world a better place for my kids. And at the moment, they are both in bands. And there really aren't that many places for bands to play. And so I'd like to be involved in that sort of side of the music industry to help promote bands and help promote places for them to play, basically.
Oh, how fabulous. So we've talked about thoughts, we've talked about how you're doing music, and I didn't realise you were doing the music photography to support your children. I'm
And that's kind of interesting where it all starts, doesn't it? That how your children have been your key inspiration. Shout For out sure. to the girls.
Yeah, every time. Like whatever they're doing, that's one of the ways I can be involved.
Yeah.
And even when they don't appreciate it, I know that down the line they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They will. And see the great benefit of what that is.
And I've got a couple of nice pictures of them on the wall at home.
I know, I've seen them. They're beautiful. Yeah.
Well, I think that's another thing worth mentioning just now is the fact that I, myself, and I'm assuming many other people, we've got to the point where all our photos are on our digital devices.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would say do yourself a favour and, you know, and to myself included, and print things out.
Well, actually, James and I were having this discussion only yesterday.
Yeah.
And about Eloise, my middle daughter, was going through our photos on the iPad and she found one that really resonated for her. And James and I have always had such legacy issues about who goes through and does the edit and gets rid of the duplicates and chooses the best one.
Yeah.
Because there's billions of them.
Yeah,
sure.
And we just thought that's actually what we need to get our kids involved in.
Yeah.
We're only keeping the images to capture the memories and we want to have them from them. And, yes, of course, we want to have the shots that we remember when they were young, but, like, it's from that. It's for that legacy issue. We
that's
want
right.
them to take it too. So yes. who better to edit those than, you know, in collaboration with us? So I think, yeah, so we're going to
– Yeah.
encourage the children to
Wonderful.
Have a
I love that.
You know, a little process where we go through and say, okay, which one is the cutest one you think of you?
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay, this is the one that you like, great. This is one mum likes, dad likes, great. yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the beauty and the tangibility and being able to be in your comfort of your home. And if you're able to get something printed and framed and have it hung up. I mean, you know.
And I was saying to someone just the other day that if you've got something on the wall, you notice it and you look at it, like you really look at it. And even if you don't really notice it for a week or two, you'll walk past it one day and you'll look at that picture again. Whereas all the pictures are on your phone or your computer, it's never there for you to notice. It's just there waiting. So print them out.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Pete Mellows, all I can say is it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Creative Rumble podcast today.
Thank you.
You've actually shared a lot of wisdom and I really appreciate, and I didn't actually understand. Of course, there's the complexity of composition of landscape shots and things like that, but I didn't actually understand the passion about being in place and about what Tasmania has to offer and trying to compose the image and the thought that goes into that. So, to your craft.
Thank you. I just hope I've explained enough because there's so much that goes into it and I can only say.
I know it's hard to explain, but yeah. It's like trying to, get a painter to explain how they're mixing the paint. Yeah, I get it.
Hey, listeners, we hope you're enjoying the Creative Rumble podcast.
If you're loving the content, why not share the podcast with someone who could use some creative inspiration?
We'd also love to hear from you. Drop us a note via our website or Instagram. Your feedback and stories make this podcast even better.
And if you want to support us further, get online to our website and click on the Buy Us a Coffee link. Your donation keeps the Creative Rumble alive.
You can find all the links in the show notes. Thank you for being a part of our creative community.
Until next time, keep rumbling.